Welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Welcome back from that short little break. I trust that all my U.S. friends had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Now, I can tell you, it is pouring down rain outside right now, and it's amazing. I grew up back east and grew up with days like this. Rainy days with tomato soup, grilled cheese, and probably a scary movie. So I'm really looking forward to unraveling something similar to that after this recording. Now, I read every single review that this show receives, good and bad. And one thing I notice quite often is the fact that people seem to enjoy that I skip the small talk and get straight into the stories. So, let's do that again tonight. I have a great show lined up for you guys. I have an amazing show lined up for you guys. So let's get this thing kicked off with a little ghost story out of the state of Oregon. This is a call from Grace.
Hi, this is Grace from Oregon. I found your podcast a couple months ago and have been exploring, listening to people's experiences of the paranormal, and thought I would call in and start sharing mine. So I'll start with the first time that I ever saw a ghost. So this happened on the Oregon coast in a small town, North Bend, Oregon, where I grew up. And I was in high school, so this was probably about 15 years ago. I was working at a pizza place, and they had told me that the building was haunted when I started working there, but I didn't believe in ghosts at the time, so I didn't take any stock in what they were saying. But I was working one day, it was slow, we didn't have any customers in the store, and I was with two of my coworkers. We had this little back room where we could do the dishes and prep, and we had a TV that had video of the doors and the lobby, so we could see if a customer came in while we were back there and come out to help them. So all three of us were in the back, and a gentleman walked in the store. The doors opened, he appeared on the TV, the bell for the door chimed. The man, I would say, was approximately in his early 40s, white male, short hair. I don't remember what he was wearing, but something generic like slacks and a button-up, something like that. So you could either walk from the doors as a customer, straightforward, and go to the counter to order, or to the left, and that would take you into the dining area and then around the corner into the bathroom. Where the bathroom was just past this little exit that we could see. It was a hallway that exited from our prep room straight towards the bathroom. So we could exit either to in front of the ordering counter or on the opposite side and exit straight out from the bathroom. So he headed towards the bathroom, and we all saw that. Nobody went out to help him at the counters, and we all turned to see him walk, or to wait for him to walk past that little opening so we could see that he was going to use the bathrooms. He never passed by that opening to go to the bathrooms. He did not appear again on the TV, and we went out into the lobby, and no one was there. The doors did not open again. We didn't hear the doors chime again. He just entered the store, walked into the dining room and disappeared into thin air. The stories they had told me of ghosts there, I never believed much, but after that, how could I say no? They told me that his name was Carl. He had been doing stuff in this store for a long time, and they were very familiar with him. He would do other things that I later noticed and picked up on because I had had this experience and had new light on what I was seeing. The soda machine would throw ice at you if you walked by it, which sometimes ice randomly falls out of machines, so that made sense. But the fact that it would actually spit out at you and only eject from the machine when a person was there, things like that would add up to definitely make me believe this. But that was my first time actually seeing a ghost. I feel very confident in believing that it was one because I had two people with me who had had previous experiences with this same ghost, and I saw it too. So that's my first ghost story. Hope you enjoyed it and can use that. And I will call back in later on and leave another one. Thanks for your podcast. I really appreciate your skeptical view on all of the topics, and I am interested to hear what you have to say about mine. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Grace. Now, this story reminds me a lot of the story that my dad called in toward the end of season 5. For those that don't remember, my dad drives a delivery truck for a uniform servicing company. And he goes from factory to factory all throughout southeast Ohio, western Pennsylvania, and northern West Virginia. And one day he walked into a factory setting, and he saw a man he didn't recognize standing at one of the machines or at a drafting table or something. And as he walked past, he kind of noticed the guy was dressed strangely, but he didn't think anything of it. Went to the main office and mentioned to the woman that he normally deals with that there was somebody strange in the factory. And that's when she informed him that, you know, no such person should exist. There shouldn't be anyone there. And it seems like this story certainly falls in line with what my dad told. So thank you very much, Grace, for taking the time to share this story. It's certainly a great way to kick off a rainy day spooky podcast. Our next call of the evening is one that took me a bit by surprise. And I think once you begin listening, you'll figure it out on your own. If not, we'll talk about it on the back end. The following is Sydney's call from the state of Tennessee.
Hey, my name's Sydney, and I grew up in East Tennessee, Johnson City area. And I have an experience I wanted to share with you guys that I've not ever really talked about. I guess sometimes I wonder if it was something that, you know, I dreamed or made up, but after hearing some of the other stories from other callers, I don't know, I guess I believe that what I saw could have been real. So, sorry, I get nervous talking about it because I've not really shared it with anyone else, but I was probably around 6 or 7. I was sleeping in my room. And I had a nightlight plugged into my room. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night. I'm not sure exactly what time it was, but I woke up and felt very scared, very nervous, and I couldn't move. And I looked over in the corner of my room and saw a really tall, dark, human figure. Looked like it was wearing a cloak. It didn't have a face. I couldn't see any eyes. It was just very dark, very tall, gloomy figure, just kind of staring at me. I remember just kind of staring back at him, watching him, and we must have sat there and stared at each other for a few minutes. And somehow I started getting movement back. I was able to move a little bit. I was able to move my fingers, and I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to dash towards the door, get out, run and go get my mom and dad. So as soon as I got out of the bed, the figure just continued to stand there and stare at me. He didn't move at all. I got up out of my bed, and as I was walking towards the door, I thought, you know what? Is this, you know, a dream? Is this my dad in here playing a trick on me? What is this? So I actually walked over towards the figure, and he still didn't move. And I got very close to him, and I reached out my hand to touch him, and when I did, it almost like my hand went through him, and it was extremely hot, very, very hot, to the point where I felt like it was burning me. I pulled my hand back really quickly and ran out of my room into my parents' room crying. Of course, I was so terrified. And they came back into my room, turned on all the lights, and of course, nothing was there. We searched everywhere. My dad was freaking out, searched the entire house. Nothing was there. I ended up sleeping in their room the rest of the night, and I think a few more times, you know, up into my late childhood, still had a lot of anxiety from it. We eventually moved home, and even in my new bedroom, my dad had to put locks on my closet doors. I lived in a bonus room over the garage, and we had storage rooms, and he had to put locks because I was just so terrified from that moment forward. But since then, I've not seen any other shadow people. Never even heard about shadow people until this podcast, so I thank you guys for bringing that to life for me. I believe that's what I saw. Thank you for letting me share my experience.
Thank you, Sydney. Your name makes me want to do the scream voice, even though I don't know how to do it. Hello, Sydney. Something like that. I don't know. I love that voice. I grew up really enjoying the Scream franchise. Anyhow, thank you, Sydney, for submitting that call. Now, the reason this one is special to me is the fact that I thought this was going to be a clear-cut, open-and-shut case of sleep paralysis. The telltale signs are all there. The anxiety, the inability to move, a figure or presence in the room, pretty much was cut and dry for me. Then she mentioned that she stood up. Now, I'm not a doctor or sleep professional of any kind, but I'm not sure that sleep paralysis victims are able to stand up and continue the hallucination. I'm not sure it exactly works that way. Now, if someone out there is listening and knows otherwise, please educate me. But as far as my research has taken me, it seems that, you know, once you have the ability to move your body, you begin to wake up and you no longer suffer the hallucinations. Now, I'm sure there's probably some gray area where that will be lasting, but the fact that she walked over and touched this entity kind of, that's a lot of action, that's a lot of movement that would wake up pretty much anyone, I would think. But again, not a doctor, not a sleep professional. So if I'm wrong here, somebody please shoot me an article or you know, if you would. But yeah, that definitely made it a strange version of the sleep paralysis call. I will say this, though, actually. I don't recall ever hearing hot being a response to touching an entity. Usually it's electric charge or cold air, but I've never heard of hot air. So that was an interesting addition to the story as well. Either way, it's definitely an interesting case. Thank you again, Sydney, for taking the time to share it. Now, our next call is a bit of a strange one. The following is John's submission from the state of North Carolina.
Hey, monsters, this is John. I'm calling about something I had happen when I was maybe 7 or 8. My brother and I were out playing in the woods behind our neighborhood. Now, mind you, our neighborhood is in the middle of a major metropolitan area. We had a little, like a smaller strip of forest kind of right behind our neighborhood between our neighborhood and another apartment complex right behind us. And there was a little creek back there, and we had just moved over there from Albemarle, North Carolina, basically, which is kind of in the country. And we were out there playing by the creek, just playing in the woods, being, you know, terrible children that we were. And all of a sudden, my brother stops and he's looking at me like, you know, did you hear that? And I was like, no, you know, teasing him, punching him, like, no, I don't hear anything. What are you talking about? And I listen and I hear what I can really only describe it as random radio chatter. Kind of like police radio chatter, but not really. With kind of like a clicking humming behind it. It was very, very strange noise. I heard it, and I'm looking at him like, oh my God, I heard that noise. And he basically turns around and runs. You know, and I'm sitting there just watching him. You know, like, what are you doing, leaving me here alone with the sound? And I turn around and look into the creek, and I don't know what it is that I saw. I saw something moving the bush around and some sort of silhouette in the brush there. And I turned around, I booked it, and I ran. Fast forward maybe 12 years, honestly. This happened somewhat recently. My brother said he heard it around. He kept hearing it in the woods. I was, you know, I moved to the city, so I never really heard anything. One night, though, I go out to a bar that's in, like, South Carolina area. And I'm just kind of hanging out. You know, I'm not drinking. I'm not doing anything of that nature. I'm by myself. And I'm just smoking a cigarette out by the woods. And I hear that damn noise again. And it's a little bit louder and a lot closer than it was before. So that, you know, creeped me out quite a bit. And honestly, it's something that I think about pretty often, even today. You know, it's something that's kind of followed me through my childhood. So if you guys know of anything close to what that could be, you know, that I would really appreciate you guys letting me know what that is, because it's kind of something that's kind of scared me for kind of my entire life. All right. Thanks. Keep up the great work. Bye.
Thank you, John. Now, this was a bit of a strange one. I'm a little, confused about the sounds that were actually heard. Did they sound like they were coming from a radio, or was it just something that you would expect to hear on a radio frequency, such as a walkie-talkie or, you know, a military channel or something like that? So I'm going to go with the former, a more biological version of the sound. It reminds me of something that I was first exposed to via the Sierra Sounds tapes, which are a series of tapes created by Ron Moorhead, where he went into the Sierra Mountains and recorded supposed Bigfoot vocalizations in the form of howls, chattering, and whoops, and that sort of thing. And actually, I know I've definitely mentioned these on the show in the past, and I believe I played a clip, but I'm going to play another clip from the Sierra Sounds that represents a phenomenon known as samurai chatter, which is a supposed Bigfoot vocalization that sounds exactly like the name suggests. So I'm going to play it. I think you'll kind of understand where the name came from. Kind of sounds like a big old samurai guy speaking a language that I don't understand. Is basically what it sounds like to me. But anyway, here are the here's a clip from the Sierra Sounds from Ron Moorhead.
That's our job. Now we know where we went for tax and all that for sure.
Per usual, you can find a link to the Sierra Sounds in the show notes for tonight's episode. No, I'm not saying that what John encountered was a Sasquatch. I just thought this was a great opportunity to, you know, explore that side of the sighting. But I will say that it does kind of coincide with the large silhouette that John mentioned seeing shortly after hearing the sounds. And North Carolina is a, I'm not going to say Bigfoot-rich state, but it's certainly a state with a handful of sightings. So I suppose anything is possible. Thank you again, John, for taking the time to share that. Our next call of the evening comes to us from a familiar voice, although we haven't heard from him in a while. The following is Scott's call.
Hey, my name is Scott. I've called before with a couple of stories, and that fact makes this a little more interesting. I was talking to my wife about the show the other day and some of the stories that I had shared, and she reminded me of an incident that I had. And the fact that I didn't remember this incident, I think, is kind of critical until she reminded me of it. Before I get into the incident itself, there's going to be some logical questions that are going to arise. I don't have answers to any of them. I know, because I'm interested in this kind of stuff, I know what it implies, but I don't have any memories, I haven't had any reoccurring dreams, I haven't had any changes in my behavior, so I don't really know what it means, I just know that it's weird. This happened about 20 years ago, and it was December, and in our area, I live near Lake Tahoe, Nevada, so obviously in December it's very cold. I'm the kind of person that when I wake up instantly. As soon as my feet hit the floor, I'm, all right, let's go. What do we got to do today? Boom, 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 that kind of a person. Not the kind of person that staggers around in the daze for 10 minutes until I've had my coffee. So I wake up really groggy, really disoriented, and I'm in my backyard. I have no history of sleepwalking. I'm about, we have some property. I'm about 100 yards away from my house, and I have become awakened, I'm sure, because it's cold. I have a flannel shirt on. The flannel shirt is not buttoned properly. It's three buttons off. My pants are on, but my belt buckle, or my belt is not buckled. My fly is down, but the buttons to my pants, the waist button is buttoned. I will tend to wear Wellington work boots, which are, for those that don't know, it's kind of like a slip-on version of logger's boots. One leg is tucked into one boot, and the other is the way I normally wear them, with the pants down over the boot. And I sit there for a minute, look around, can't figure out what the heck, why am I here, what happened. Go back into the house. It was my day off, and I went back to sleep. Again, just to reiterate, no weird dreams, no weird, like, flash memories, no changes in my behavior, nothing of the sort. So, if something happened to me, I'm sorry, but I have no clue what. And I don't have any weird recollections or memories or anything, just what I told you, waking up in the middle of my backyard in a state of disarray and confused. And anyhow, that's it. I hope you enjoyed the story. Have a great night.
Thank you, Scott, for calling in. Now, I believe this is the same Scott that submitted the great Sasquatch call from Northern California and the terrifying spider with a human face from Bosnia. This sounds very reminiscent of a call I explored on the last episode, actually. If you recall, I discussed wearing pajamas inside out to help determine if an alien abduction might be a part of your life. And this certainly seems eerily similar. Now, the fact that he woke up in his yard with his clothing disheveled and worn in a funny way could indicate that he received assistance from perhaps someone that doesn't fully understand how clothing works. Or it's also possible that Scott was simply sleepwalking and in his daze was unable to put his clothing on correctly or somewhat haphazardly. I haven't experienced that myself, but my brother used to sleepwalk a lot, and he would do similar things like that. So, yeah, I'm not discounting Scott's experience whatsoever, but that certainly could be one way to explain rationally what took place that evening. Either way, thank you so much, Scott, for the call. I always enjoy these possible alien abduction calls. I'm just fascinated by the subject. So thanks again. I feel like I have to say this almost every time, but the next call of the evening is a bit of a strange one. The following was submitted anonymously from the state of California.
This is about some phone calls I had during about of insomnia about 12 years ago when I was in college. So it was about 2004 in a college town about an hour from Big Bear, probably not too far from where you live now. Didn't live in any special neighborhood. It was very boring, actually. Lived with a couple other students in this Southern California town. But I fell into a deep depression that year as my last year of college, and sleep totally eluded me. I've never been good at it, but it was definitely worse that year. And this was real clinical depression. And so while everyone else in the house slept, I would stay up all night. I was lucky to get a few hours of sleep, and this is when the phone call started. And to give you some context, this is when our phones were quite primitive. It was a flip phone, like a Nokia, you know, with Snake on it, that kind of thing. So I'd fall asleep. Finally, after, you know, hours of trying and tossing and turning and sweating, and it was horrible insomnia. And it only ever happened after I fell asleep. So it could be anywhere from 10 minutes to, you know, an hour after I had drifted off fitfully. Never even good quality sleep, but the phone would ring. I'd look at the number on the caller ID, and it was always coming from my own phone number. So I'd be like, how is this coming from my own phone number? I now realize that it was a spoofing app, but it's still eerie nonetheless. I'd pick up the phone and I'd say, who is this? Hello. And they would never identify themselves, but what I could hear was the sound of traffic on a busy street. It sounded like they were near a freeway in a big city, perhaps on, you know, a boulevard in Los Angeles. Just they were outside. This person was never inside. And what's worse is that they spoke in a falsetto like Buffalo Bill. What I can't tell you is what we talked about, because I was basically in a trance. And you have to understand that in my day-to-day life, I'm not very patient with people trying to talk to me who I don't want to talk to. I've never been that kind of woman. But this thing or human, I don't know what it was. It was very scary. It called me in a falsetto voice. I'd say, hello, who is this? And they'd be like, you don't know? You don't know who this is? And I'd like, no, I don't know who this is. And I'd start guessing, and they'd play mind games with me. Never talked about anything of importance, but I felt like they were invading my room or my space, my head. I felt like I was under a spell. Eventually I would get out of the trance. I'd hang up, be like, and I'd be terrified. I called my boyfriend at the time and be like, I'm getting these horrible calls. He never understood. He's a very big skeptic. He never got it. I didn't know if this thing or person was outside the house, but I didn't live on a busy street, so it seemed unlikely. But I just locked the door, and then any hope of sleep was gone at that point. Now, this happened at least five times. Same falsetto voice, same trance. Definitely happened. I even tried to call the phone company to block the phone number, and they said, you can't. It's just, you know, they're spoofing your own phone number back at you. So I couldn't really do anything, and I can't tell you why I kept picking up the phone either, because that's not like me. The last time I spoke to this thing or man or being, I don't know what this was. I was very tired of it. I had no f**ks left to give because I had to get some rest, and I couldn't get any rest. I was having serious consequences in my life, and this thing would only call me after I had fallen asleep. It knew when to call because it never called when I was awake, you know? It was very eerie. And I had no patience anymore, and its power was gone over me, and I said, stop calling me. And it said, what? In the crazy falsetto voice. And it said, stop calling me. And there was a moment of silence. And then I heard this deep, guttural scream. They said, shut up. But I can't do it because my voice isn't low enough. And while a man's voice could be that low, I've never really heard anything like that since. And I'm not one to believe in demonic activity, but anytime I hear supposed demonic activity recorded, it does sound like that, which is horrifying. But it did stop it. And eventually I did get out of the depression and I went on about my life and I graduated school, but it was a really terrifying event, and there are explanations that people will latch on to, like, okay, you were delirious because you didn't get any rest or whatever, but it just felt wrong. Didn't just feel like a creepy person, it felt wrong. I felt violated, and I felt like something was there with me in the room when this happened, and I wasn't acting like myself. So anyway, I hope you found this interesting. I'd love to hear it on the show, but if not, say lovey. Keep on doing what you're doing. I really love it. Okay, bye.
Thank you, caller. If you attended the school that I think you attended, I can practically see it from my yard. Now, the details of this call sort of remind me of one of my favorite paranormal stories. And, of course, that is the story of Indrid Cold. Now, on November 2nd, 1966, a mere 15 days and 50 miles from the Mothman sightings of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, something strange took place. While traveling south on Interstate 77 near Parkersburg, West Virginia, sewing machine salesman Woody Durenberger claimed to have met a man not of this world, a man named Indrid Cold. The following is an interview that aired on WTAP-TV out of Parkersburg. And the voice you're about to hear is Woody Durenberger's.
And just before I came to the intersection of Route 47, there was a car past me, overtaking me from behind. And following closely behind this car was this unidentified flying object. And as the car ahead, or the car behind, passed me, this object was following close behind it, and it swerved directly in front of my truck, turning crosswise. And when it turned crosswise, it slowed down. It started slowing, not abruptly or too fast, but it gave me plenty of time to step on my brakes and slow down with it. But it forced me to come to a complete stop. As soon as I had stopped, there was a door opened in the side of this vehicle, and this man stepped out and came directly to me, or came to the truck. He walked to the right-hand side of the truck, and he told me to roll down the window. He asked me to roll down the window on my right-hand side of my truck. And I'd done what he asked. And this man stood there, and he first asked me what I was called. And I knew he meant my name, and I told him my name. And he asked me, he said, why are you frightened? He said, don't be frightened. We wish you no harm. He said, we mean you no harm. We wish you only happiness. And I told him my name, and when I told him my name, he said he was called Cold. That was the name that he was called by. And he asked me what the city of Parkersburg, he pointed to the lights. He didn't point, but he gave the impression that he was pointing, and he asked me what that was called. And I told him it was Parkersburg. It was a city, a town. And he asked me if most all the people lived in this city or town. And I explained to him that it was a place of business. It's where we transacted our business. That the people lived in communities, outlying communities, most of the people. And when I told him that this was a city, he said that where his home was, that was called a gathering. And again, he told me not to be frightened, which I was. I was very frightened. And as far as I can understand, this was all mental. There was no spoken words from him. I knew what he was asking me, but yet he stood there and his mouth did not move. He had a smile on his face. He appeared very courteous and friendly. And after I talked with him a while, he told me he would see me. He said, we will see you again. And he left in his vehicle.
Now, Mr. Dernberger, for the sake of our television audience here, the words that you used, cold would be like cold is his name. This is how it sounded to you, that his name was Cold.
Yes.
And the word gathering was like we would know together or something like this.
Yes, that's what he meant. That was the impression that he gave.
And he did not move his lips nor utter any sound whatsoever. He talked with you in telepathy then.
That was right, that his lips did not move. He uttered no words at all.
But you talked. I mean, he didn't.
Yes, I talked. He told me twice that I could either talk or I could think, which either would be better or easier for me.
This was an instant thing. This wasn't, there was no hesitation on his part nor on your part. You knew immediately what he was communicating to you, and he knew immediately what you were communicating to him.
That is right.
A link to that video can be found in tonight's show notes as well. Now, Dernberger continued to have contact with Cold beyond that night. In fact, he even took several trips to Cold's home planet of Langulos. Now, if you'd like to learn more on this case, I suggest Small Town Monsters Case Files. Now, they did an episode on this, and I will provide a link in the show notes for that as well. It's certainly worth checking out, and it's only about 7 or 8 minutes long. So thank you again, caller, for taking the time to share this. It certainly allowed me to dive into one of my favorite stories a little bit further. Now, speaking of stories and small towns, we are only 4 short episodes away from the season finale, so you still have time to submit your hometown legend. Now, keep in mind, if you have a crybaby bridge, or a water spirit, or a haunted something or another that only happens once a year, pretty much, if it's in your hometown, and it's a legend that everyone talks about, that's what we want to hear about. So to submit that, simply call the hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 1-888-608-6444. Or you can email me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Now, of course, I'm always on the lookout for standard paranormal stories, so if you have one that you're sitting on, certainly call that in as well. Now, I have a couple more stories to share with you guys, but before we do, I want to touch on a few of these announcements. These past few weeks, I've had the pleasure of donating a couple calls to 2 fine, fine podcasts. Cam and Kyle of Expanded Perspectives did a recent story on a phenomenon they're calling Glimmer Man, which is basically the predator-like entity that people are running into in the forest. And you may recall Jen and Justin's calls from back in Season 5. I lent them the calls to explore that a little further, so you may want to go check out their two-part series on what they're calling the Glimmer Man. That's certainly a very interesting thing. So go to Expanded Perspectives in iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcast. And I should also mention that David Flora, over at Blurry Photos, recently did a two-part Dogman episode in which I also donated a couple of calls. So if you want to hear how these guys kind of break these calls down, I highly recommend checking out not only Expanded Perspectives, but Blurry Photos as well. Two fine, fine podcasts. And as I mentioned on the last episode, I'm still accepting donations toward my new studio space and research area. It's a project that I'm looking to get started around January, and I'm certainly going to post pictures and everything like that. So if you're looking for a way to support the show, a couple bucks there would be a huge help to get some upgraded facilities, more books, more learning materials, and we can continue this wild ride that we're on. And I want to put out a huge thank you to those that have already donated. Stephen R. Sorry, I missed you last week, Stephen. Matt B. Carol R. Teresa Z. Thank you again, Teresa. Drew M. and Gordon H. So a huge thank you to you guys. With support from people like you, I'm able to continue this podcast, and not only continue it, but continue to grow it. So a humongous thank you. And for those of you that are on the Facebook page, you may have noticed, but I celebrated my birthday a couple weeks ago, and Sarah gave me an awesome gift. There's some sort of Halloween Nightmare Before Christmas themed beer tasting event at the infamous Queen Mary in Long Beach, California. And she got me a couple tickets to that, so we went ahead and booked a room, and we're actually going tomorrow. So I'm going to do a little bit of an investigation after the event. The activity reported in this ship is just off the wall. So I'm going to do a short video. I may record a couple clips here and there, and if the Wi-Fi is great and I haven't had too much pumpkin beer, I may go live. So we'll try to figure this all out, but one way or another, you guys will at least experience a little bit of this, and Patreon supporters will definitely see a full video on this subject. So looking forward to it. I'm trying to stay away from the stories as much as possible so that I don't expect anything. I want to kind of see if I have any experiences, and then I can go back and research that experience and see if somebody else has had it rather than the other way around. So I'm doing my best to kind of go into this as blind as possible, even though I've read of extensively on the Queen Mary in the past. So anyway, so that's happening tomorrow, so we're really looking forward to that. And that brings us to our next call of the evening. The following is Allison's call from the state of New York.
Hi, Derek. I'm in my car right now. Sorry if the audio isn't great. It's coming through my Bluetooth. This is Allison from upstate New York. I called in for the back-to-school special about my haunted house in my college town. But this is a different story about a doppelganger experience that I had. And it was on a drive that I'm making right now. I live in another city, and my boyfriend lives in a city that's about an hour and a half away. So I make the drive 2-3 times a week, an hour and a half, 100 miles each way, all the time. And we've been dating for about 4 or 5 years. We hung out for a little bit before we dated. And so I've been making this drive frequently, often, for my entire adult life. And so I was driving to my boyfriend's house about a couple weeks ago, and I had left. So it was during the nighttime, or not nighttime, but it was more like dusk, so the sun was shining directly in my window, so I could see the person behind me clear as day. And when I looked behind me, it was my mom, and she was driving a black SUV, and my mom has alopecia, and she's kind of a bigger lady, so she has a very specific look. So she has, like, white kind of baby bird peach fuzz, she has a mole right above her lip, she has freckles, and she was smiling, a huge smile, and it was her, I swear on my life, it was her. And I was just so flabbergasted and, like, taken back by my mom is driving behind me when I just I left her at the house. I don't know if I was living at home at the time. But I had just left her at the house, and now she's behind me on the throughway going to my boyfriend's house. So I slowed down a little bit so that this person could pass me, and when I looked over, it was a small, skinny, maybe 16, 20-year-old girl with long black hair. Looks the complete opposite of my mother. So I called my mom and was like, Mom, where are you right now? And she was like, oh, I'm at home. And I was like, well, I just saw your doppelganger. So, but that's my story. Kind of short, super weird, really freaked me out. But there it is. Thank you so much. I'm really enjoying the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Now, I know the brain likes to repeat patterns, and it certainly has the ability to play tricks on us. But I feel like Allison should have been able to distinguish between a perfect stranger and her very own mother, a face that I can only imagine she's extremely familiar with. So it must have been quite a shock when the woman overtook her, when she realized it was in fact not her mother. These doppelganger cases are certainly creepy and definitely interesting, but as far as a logical explanation, I honestly have no idea. But thank you either way, Allison, for the entertaining and creepy little call. And that brings us to our final call of the evening. Now, this is a very special call to me. I often will sit in our living room. This time of year, I'll sit next to the fireplace and probably with a cat on my lap and listen to the calls that come in. I usually get through a couple dozen a week and kind of file them away and throw a few notes down here, that kind of thing. And I usually quit when I get tired of sitting in the seat or... Now, I often do it late at night, simply because that's the only time I have available. So the other night, I was doing just that, and that's when I stumbled upon Jeff's call. And when Jeff's call started off, it seemed fairly benign. But what he described in the call chilled me to the bone, to the point where, for the first time ever, I had to just close the computer. So without further ado, the following is Jeff's call from my home state of Ohio.
Hey Derek, my name is Jeff. I'm from a suburb of Dayton, Ohio, and I just wanted to tell you a story that just happened 2 weeks ago. I was driving with my 3-year-old son, and he's just in the back of the car singing and having a good time like he's usually doing. And we start passing a cemetery, and this cemetery doesn't have monuments and tombstones like you would think. They're little flowers and plaques in the grass, so basically it just looks like a giant garden. So let me tell you that my 3-year-old son has no idea what a cemetery is at all. He has no clue. He doesn't know what death is, really. But he was singing, and he just stopped singing, and he points at the cemetery and says, "Look at all those people." And I look over, and there's not a single person. It's a Sunday. There's no funerals. There's not a single person in the cemetery. I am driving, so there may have been a couple, but I didn't see any. And I say, "What people, Miles?" He says, "All those people over there. There sure are a lot of grandmas." And at this point, I had chills run throughout my entire body. I had no idea what he was talking about, so I said, "Well, what are they doing?" And he said, "They're all standing there, looking down at the grass." And at this point, I kind of just, I don't know, I hit the gas kind of just, you know, to get out of there. And we get home later on that day, and he's watching one of his favorite shows, cartoons on Netflix, and he just turns to me and says, "You know, they weren't alive." And I'm like, "What, these little witches on this cartoon? What are you talking about?" He says, "No, those people we saw, they were all paused." So I'm not sure what to think of this. I don't know if my kid has the sixth sense or if he's just has a wild imagination, but I just wanted to see if you had any input on this. I really love the show, and if you have any insight, I would appreciate it. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jeff. Now, it's no secret that children are believed to have abilities beyond those of adults. I've heard countless stories of imaginary friends that have turned out to be remarkably similar to former residents that died in the home. And the case surrounding Jeff's son certainly seems similar. Many people have tried to explain why children may have this ability. Some of the theories suggest that they have a more vivid imagination or have not been shamed into discounting strange and unexplainable events that our society teaches us cannot be possible. So whatever the case here is, it certainly is creepy. I can only imagine hearing those words uttered, only to turn to find an empty cemetery. It's definitely something straight out of The Sixth Sense. So thank you again, Jeff, for taking the time to share that story. I know it ended my night of paranormal research. And I want to thank all of you for your patience. Clearly, it sounds like I'm losing my voice, so I'm happy that I made it through all the way without it cracking completely. And that's going to do it for this episode. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Additional support is provided by Warren Ponabbott, Addie Lloyd, and Tony Bell. All audio used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. And music for this episode is provided by Mayu and Coag Music. Thank you all for listening, and until next week.
If you thought you had to travel far to savor the pad thai of Bangkok, or to taste the pastries of Paris, take another look. With 2x total points at grocery stores, your same kitchen can come with more cuisines. Sapphire Preferred from Chase. Make more of what's yours.
Valid up to $1,000 in purchases per month from November 1st, 2020 to April 30th, 2021. Account subject to credit approval. Card issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To start the ignition. To feel confident. To be connected to everything. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes a dynamic experience. The Invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open. But the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.